For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Well, I'm going to get started, and some of you are new, and if you missed the first session, I encourage you to come back tomorrow morning. We're going to repeat sessions 1 and 2 tomorrow. I think it's at 10:30, the workshop. So the introduction gives a context, but just in review, my name's Doug Frank. I'm with Search Ministries, and this is Grow Your Marriage Workshop, and it's not really a workshop to work on your marriage. It's a workshop primarily to help you learn how to use the topic of improving marriages to reach out to your non-believing friends and neighbors and colleagues. So one of the things we let the last group know, that there are facilitator notes. So if you don't want to take a lot of notes, they have these in the back for sale. And I think they're $20. So if you don't want to have to take a lot of notes, those are available. Or if you want to order them when you get back home and you have a number of people that want to go through this, that's another option. We started out talking about what is love and looked at love languages. And that was one of the assignments that we give couples. We send couples out on a date night after the first week. For many of them, it's the last time they had a date was when they were dating each other before they got married. So we want them to get into the habit of going out on a creative date and actually having it being very intentional and talk about what their love languages are. And typically when they come back for the second week, we're going to be talking about communication. But we have a discussion about the love language and how that went. And we usually go around the room and ask, what did you find out? Were you able to guess what your spouse's love languages were accurately? And then how did that compare to the online, when you went online and took the test and it sent you the results? How close were you to really understanding your spouse's love languages as well as your own? What we have found is that there's some couples that guess it right on, and then there's others that are so off that you would wonder if they even knew their spouse. But this is usually a turning point, because now we get them talking about what is love, and as we established in the first week, one of the barriers to love is what? For those that were here, the enemy of every marriage, selfishness. Selfishness is the enemy of marriage, and it's one of the things that gets in the way of love. And so typically when we get back in these groups, we'll have them review a little bit of what they learned from the first week and a little bit of teaching on selfish and unselfish communication. The goal for this session basically is to discuss how selfish communication can impede a marriage and how learning good other-focused communication can actually help a marriage develop into something that's actually enjoyable and healthy and growing. We're going to talk about the impact of selfishness on marriage and how to learn other focused communication skills as opposed to ones that are focused on and putting the spotlight on ourselves. So when it comes to, this is an example of a question that we would throw out in the group to get kind of prime the pump and start, and I'll just throw it out to you. What do you think are some barriers to good communication? What would you say in marriage? What would be barriers to good communication?
Impatience.
Ooh, that's a good one. Impatience, yeah. Well, explain what you mean.
Being so concerned that with having your turn, that you know, hear what the other person is saying, or sort of something that's
Yeah.
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 speak from experience.
Yeah, I will have to say I'm recovering from that myself. Yeah, I'm in process. Yeah, for the sake of the recording, I'll just repeat what I heard you say is one is impatience where we complete other people's sentences, and then secondly, where we're thinking about our agenda of how we're going to answer and we're not really listening to the other person, we're thinking about how we're going to respond. That's a good one, and is a huge barrier. And I know my wife will say to me, "Did you just hear what I just said?" And I said, no, I actually tuned out. What, can you repeat that again? So that does create barriers. Any other barriers to communication? That you're saying that you might assume what they're thinking or what they're feeling or what they're talking about?
Yeah. I think when you're asking a question, they can answer and just kind of project something on, like, oh, he said it that way. And then you're not even thinking further. But they understand you, or
they. Yeah. So you're saying. So it sounds like you're saying when the barrier is when somebody jumps to conclusions before really hearing the whole story. Is that?
Probably. Or
yeah. They might jump to a conclusion or jump to a cause, the reason you're doing that, before you've even finished maybe the story or gotten your thoughts out. That definitely puts up walls. It shuts communication down rather quickly. Explosive anger is a deal killer for many a marriage, for, you know, understandably. And we're going to actually talk about some of the other problems in marriage, but when it comes to verbal and nonverbal barriers, what would be some barriers that might get in the way nonverbally? Yeah, there's a. Yeah, so you're saying not leaning in.
No, leaning in.
Oh, leaning in.
Kind of a intimidating.
Oh, being more in their face, kind of.
Well, not even just in your face. I mean, this is a very different discussion than this.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And this is a control of the discussion. This.
Yeah, so maybe having an open posture as opposed to closing yourself down, or somebody who's got their arms crossed nonverbally, you don't know if they're mad or if they're just cold. Oh, yeah. Yeah, none of us do that, but yeah. Yeah, eye rolling. I think you might have mentioned it is eye contact or the lack thereof. That's probably the number one nonverbal thing that's a pet peeve for most people. And I think this is, when you're married, it's the hardest thing to practice at home. When you meet strangers, very easy. When you come home, why is it we kind of forget how to have good eye contact? And so one of the things I want to do, and what we do in a group, I'll let you experience this, is, we'll have to split this up. We want you to pair, if you're not here with your spouse, I want you to pair up with somebody, and we're going to do an exercise that communicates the importance of nonverbal communication skills. Now, it's not going to be weird or anything, but one of you is going to be a listener, and one of you is going to be a speaker, and you're only going to speak for about 30 seconds, and you're going to talk about what last week was like for you. What did you do? What was it like? What, you know? And so the listener is supposed to use the worst nonverbal listening skills that they can think of. Okay? And we're going to do that for 30 seconds, and then I'll say time. But why don't you guys find a partner if you don't have one, and we'll just do this for practice sake. Okay? So why don't you go, and then the speaker tell about what their week was like last week, and the other person, without speaking, you can say anything you want, or not say anything you want. You can do anything you want. Just don't leave the room, just to communicate non-verbally that you're not interested to listen. Okay? Let's go. Go ahead and find somebody. You guys want to... Yeah. Rachel? Few more seconds. Okay, time. All right, speakers. How did that feel when you were telling them and they weren't paying attention? What were they doing that was communicating non-verbally they're not interested? What's that?
Everything.
Okay. She normally is a great listener, so that was... Oh, so there you go. Well, that's good. You got to practice a little bit. How did that feel?
Really, you
know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't feel appreciated by that. You don't feel like really continuing on sometimes. Okay. Anybody else? How did that feel for the speakers? So did you kind of see that he wasn't interested, and you changed kind of? Yeah. So that's not too motivating when they're not looking and they're turning away. Yeah. Well, we're going to do the same things, keep those same rules, but now what we want you to do is use the best nonverbal communication skills without speaking, and this time. What we want you to do is talk about what you're hoping to get out of this XSI conference and what you're excited about, some of the talks you've heard. And same person, use the best nonverbal skills. 30 seconds, go. Okay, let's bring it back. Speakers, how did that feel this time, now that they were focusing and listening to you. What did that feel like? Felt pretty good? What was it that they were doing that communicated that they were listening to you? What showed you that? He was turned toward you before he was turned away from you, right? Okay. Anything else? He was nodding and smiling, engaging. Did that encourage you to keep speaking this time? Yeah. Whereas before, you didn't feel like even continuing the conversation. We've all had these experiences where you're with somebody, it's a party or whatever, and they're looking around. Or maybe you've had this experience. Do you mind if I strap your phone to my forehead so that I can pretend you're looking at me when I talk? Yeah, technology's great, but it can also be, my wife and I struggle with this sometimes, where we just need to set the phones aside and no technology and go out on a date without our phones on, put them away. So this is important to realize, and when it comes to nonverbal communication, what percentage of our communication is the actual words that we communicate? Research shows this, but what would you guess is our words, what value, percentage of words are important in communicating? Any guesses? 50? Okay, 50, what else? Anybody else want to guess? What's that? Okay. Okay. Well, would you believe 7%? When we're communicating, it's only 7% that's most important. That's why sometimes when you're emailing, people can misunderstand. I don't know if you've ever had that. And the reason for that is, part of it is they don't know the tone of voice. So what percentage is the tone of voice that's important? Any idea? What did you say? 30 or 50. Well, that's a pretty good guess. 38% is our tone of voice. And when we talk about tone of voice, we're talking about pitch, volume, and tone. And you know that by changing the pitch, by changing the tone or the emphasis, we can totally change the meaning. So for instance, if I say, you just use the simple words, the 7% words that say, I didn't say you were stupid. I can change the meaning just by changing my tone of voice. I didn't say you were stupid. What's inferred there? What's that? Someone else did. I didn't say you were stupid. I thought it. I was thinking it, but I didn't say it. I didn't say you were stupid. You are. I didn't say you were stupid. Something else. So tone of voice is really important. And then when it comes down to body language, that's 55%. So what we see here is 93% of communication is nonverbal, and 7% is the words, just the words. So it does matter how you say it. And it's important to understand that our spouse's communication style and understanding how we communicate helps us to go from either a monologue to a dialogue. And I know for myself, I'm an extrovert. My wife knows this. My administrative assistant, Rachel, knows this. I process things out loud, and sometimes it drives people nuts. I haven't come up with the final decision. I'm just processing, thinking out loud. You may have somebody in your home church or in a group or in your marriage where you're an external processor. So you haven't really finalized your thoughts on this. You're just processing. Well, my wife's an introvert, and she's thinking long and hard about things, and she has an idea and she has her opinion about things, but she's not processing out loud, she's doing it internally. And so she has a preferred way of processing and a preferred way of communicating. And so in our small group, we're going to talk about preferred ways of listening. and it's preferred listening or preferred communication styles. And at this point, we pass out this handout that's called, there's three different styles. It goes from, are you a share your feelings kind of person, or are you just the facts? Don't give me all the detail, just give me the facts. Or are you in, you know, land the plane, cut to the chase, or are you enjoy the journey? You like to go into all the details, you like to just talk, you like to have long phone conversations. Whereas if you're a land the plane kind of a communicator, you like voicemail because you keep it short and to the point. You don't like long conversations. Or are you more of the headliner communicator where you put things in broad brushstrokes? Or you prefer specific, concrete, say what you mean, don't beat around the bush? And so you can see that when we do this in our groups, and we have them on a continuum here, mark where they are and where their spouse is, and then we come back as a group and we talk about that. Obviously, for the sake of time, we're not going to do that here. Plus, you don't have this, but it is in the leader note packet, and that's really important. So what we see is that different communication styles and preferences, this is another reason why we have misunderstandings and why we get frustrated with one another, because we don't communicate the way our spouse communicates. And one of the things I try to teach people in the group is it's not wrong, it's just different. So if you can capture that, it's not wrong the way she's communicating, it's just different. It's different than I would do. The other thing is that listening is a super important aspect of resolving conflict and communicating care and empathy towards your mate. And active listening is not only important, but I believe you can't resolve conflict in a marriage unless you have listening skills. Because if you don't, you're going to be jumping to conclusions, you're going to be getting impatient, you're going to be thinking about your answer, how you're going to defend yourself, as opposed to truly trying to accurately understand what your spouse is feeling and thinking. So active listening helps you to communicate empathy, which is understanding where they're coming from. Research shows that we spend 45% of our time per week hearing and listening. 45% of our time. What percentage of time do you think we spend in, or at least what percentage of time do you think we retain of that, those things that we listen to? We spend 45% listening. How much of that do we retain? Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay. Well, it's actually a little better than that. We remember 20% of what we hear. And part of it is that we think at 125 to 250 words a minute. This is based on research, and I'm not sure how they did this. But we think at 125 to 250 words per minute, or we listen at 125 to 250. We think at 1,000 to 3,000 words a minute. So why do you think we have a hard time listening? Our minds are impatient. We can think of tons of things, what we need to get done, and the chores around the house, and what needs to be done at work. And our mind is, we're way down the highway, and they're still back here. So active listening is, I compare it to, when you're watching a DVD and you've got it on fast forward two times, three times, four times, and it's buzzing by so fast, active listening slows it down to normal speed so that you can understand what they're actually feeling and thinking. And it is a skill. It isn't something that we're innately born with in terms of the ability to listen. That's why in the Bible will say in James 1:19, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. I think we have it backwards. we're slow to listen, quick to speak, and quick to get angry. But Scripture, the Bible tells us that very practically that we need to be quick listeners. And so at this point, there are three parts to active listening. And in our groups, we hand out this handout that, let's see here. It's a feeling chart. It has all three elements. We use a tentative phrase, and by tentative, what we're saying is that we don't know exactly what that person's feeling and thinking. So we need to be tentative. And a tentative, for instance, I'll give you an example. Somebody says, your wife says to you, I'm so frustrated, no matter what I do, I can't please my boss. So a tentative might be, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying, or it seems like you're pretty upset about this. Tentative is you're not sure exactly what they're feeling and thinking. And so on this chart, we have a feeling chart, and I know for myself, the extent of my feeling vocabulary is mad, glad, and sad. But this feeling chart has varying degrees of basically seven categories of emotions, from angry, and there's about a list of 20 under that anger category. I literally would copy this and have this by my phone, just trying to learn these emotion words. But it's important that we understand and perceive how our partner feels. The last part is paraphrasing the thought, what are they talking about? What is it they're talking about? So getting back to this person that says, I'm so frustrated, no matter what I do, I can't please my boss. A tentative, a paraphrase of that might be, it seems like you're pretty irritated to try so hard without succeeding and not being able to please your boss. Now, I'm not saying it exactly what they're saying. That's parroting. I'm paraphrasing. So the reason we want to teach this is when couples begin to learn how to slow it down and actually reflect back what they're hearing their spouse say and what they hear them feeling, then there's a connection. And this is really important. When we teach this, we give several options. One is we either, at this point, give a practice, and in the leader's manual, there's slips of paper with different one-sentence scenarios, statements, and we'll have one person be the listener and one be the speaker, and they say it, and then we have them paraphrase it back. And we have the group, the whole group, weigh in. Was there a tentative? Was there a thought? And was there a feeling? The other thing that we do is, this is an option, is I use video clips. And one of them is Everybody Loves Raymond. And there is an episode where Deborah and Raymond, the two stars in the show, the parents, are taking a parenting class on listening. And their assignment is to come back home and practice this. And I'm going to have Rachel cue this up. And I'll set this up for you in terms of what's going on. Ray's parents, Marie and Frank, live right across the street from them. And if you're familiar with it, the parents are always fighting, constantly. And so Ray goes across the street, he's watching his parents argue, and Ray has to practice what he's learning in class. So this is an example, and what I want you to observe is he being tentative? Is he communicating and reflecting back a feeling? And what is the thought that he's getting? And observe. Now, he's not in conflict. He's actually mediating a conflict, but the principles still apply. So, yeah, listening one.
This is our tax refund check. It was stuck to the bottom of the ice cream. It's been on my back for a month telling me that I lost it. I'm not the one who eats ice cream in this house.
Oh, you eat ice cream.
Tofutti, I eat tofutti.
You tell your friends you eat tofutti, but then you eat my ice cream. Take a look at the tofutti. There's not a dent in the tofutti.
Yeah, thanks.
If I do eat ice cream, and I'm not saying that I do, I put it in a bowl like a person, not on the table where it gets stuck to an important check that somebody accuses me of losing.
You know, in class, you were just doing this.
Why can't you just admit this is your fault?
Because I don't lose things, Frank. I'm organized.
Not organized. Insane! You've got a shoebox labeled pieces of string too small to use.
That I should tie together into a noose.
I got a beam all picked out.
Yeah, I got a step stool for you.
Wait, just listen here for a second. Wait. So, Dad, you think Mom's being unfair?
That's right. It's always my fault when she can't find something.
Because I work like a dog to keep this place straight, and he messes it up with all his projects.
Ice cream's a project?
So why do you think that's being inconsiderate?
Have you met your father?
What about your consideration? Do I ever get any thanks for all the stuff I do around here?
Like what? What is it you do?
Well, didn't I fix the thing?
That's true, Bob, he did.
So Dad is feeling unappreciated.
That's right. Oh, come on. I don't appreciate you.
How do I know?
Yeah, evidently Dad isn't hearing. Thank you.
Oh, he wants thank you. This isn't thank you?
I guess Mom's saying actions speak louder than words.
That's very good, Brandon.
But sometimes we need to hear the words.
Yeah, I need words.
And I don't need words?
I'm sorry the check got stuck to the chubby hubby.
You never said that before.
No one's ever said that before.
I appreciate you.
Thanks.
Holy crap, it works.
Pot roast, hey. Oh, great. I love your mother's pot roast.
Oh, I'm going to get an Amy here.
Okay. So what did you observe in terms of active listening? It's just the... It lets you know that it's turning off.
Yes, it does.
What did you see Raymond doing? What parts of the active listening did you observe? Was there identifying tentative feelings? Was he tentative with that? What did he do there? That's exactly what active listening is. It's clarifying what the other person's saying and what they're feeling. So he used the word, so Dad's not feeling appreciated. He used the word, so that's a tentative, but he did identify the feeling unappreciated. Any other things that you observed? It was getting pretty intense. In terms of, it was escalating. And so what ended up happening was, as Raymond began to help them understand how the others were feeling about this, each other and the problem, the issue, he cut kind of through the fog and got to exactly what the issue was, of feeling unappreciated. And if you think about it, it was really a conflict of love languages. He likes words of affirmation, she likes acts of service, and they weren't communicating. Obviously, we can't take the time here to go into great detail, but Doug Pollack is doing a Listening for Heaven's Sake workshop tomorrow, and I encourage you to take that. Equipping Ministries also does a full-blown workshop around the country, but Cincinnati has one, and they do it up here in Columbus. And it's a full day of active listening, working on that. And people come out of there pretty transformed in terms of having better listening skills. That's the chart that comes in the manual, and we actually have groups work through that. We also list some of the biblical basis, and in our groups we say the Bible has a lot to say about communication. Proverbs 18:2 says, "Fools have no interest in understanding, they only want to air their own opinions." Proverbs 18:13, "Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish." And Proverbs 15:1, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." So in our grow your marriage groups. We have the seekers read these out loud, and for the first time, many of them are reading verses and they're seeing the relevance of the Bible to relationships, and that it actually speaks to listening and how tone of voice, a gentle answer turns away wrath. That's in the Bible. And we say, yeah, that was written 2,500 years ago by a guy named King Solomon, considered one of the wisest kings that ever lived. And it's in this book with 31 chapters, and you might want to check it out. Here are a few of the verses. And so we don't go into great detail of like doing a Bible study on each of these verses, but it is in there. And I think that when they get this, we pass this out and they read it. We're not pulling out big Bibles, but so they feel intimidated, but we're having them go through this. The homework for that week is, most of us think we're pretty good listeners, not bad listeners, so we have them, their assignment for their date night is to take a listening quiz. And on that, in the quiz, it's basically, they fill it out, and as you can see, there's 16 questions, and we want them to talk about the results and how they can better improve their communication. And we also want to take that preferred style of communication and have them go over that on their date night. And then next week, come back and tell us what happened. The next week, we deal with the area of conflict, because invariably we have misunderstandings based on personality type and based on issues that have been unresolved. And the goal of this session is that every relationship, we say, has conflict. Nobody has a perfect marriage. Working through conflict in a healthy and unselfish manner can build intimacy in marriage. However, when dealt with inappropriately to win rather than to resolve, it can create barriers to intimacy in a marriage. So we say that our goal really this week in group is to develop some ground rules that will protect the intimacy that we desire. And so at this point, we'll do some teaching, a little bit of teaching on conflict, and that good communication can help us break through some of these barriers. And the goal is to reach a place of trust and respect, where you trust your spouse, you respect them, and we want them to be able to really work through conflict. But to prime the pump, we'll ask the question, how do we react to disappointments and hurt? How do most of us react? And so we'll get some feedback going there. And I remember one of the guys I'm meeting with, he's telling me that they're having this struggle. And one of the struggles is, they're having financial issues. And with those financial issues, the wife says, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. So now we have this unmet expectation in their marriage. She expected a certain lifestyle, no glitches with the finances, and now that's created this conflict. So the other thing that we find is that every marriage has these conflicts, but it can be around time management, money issues. It can be issues around culture, the culture we grew up in, or what part of the country, or the kind of family we came out of, and or just miscommunicating. And so we segue into anger. What about anger? Is it ever appropriate to have anger? What's inappropriate and appropriate anger? And we talk about when we are angry or something's pushing a button in us in our marriage, we typically have four distress responses. And we talked about different styles of communication last week. This week we're talking about different styles of communication. And there's another handout, and in your notes it lists four different ways or styles of dealing with conflict. Now you may not be able to read that, but the first one is called a lion. And lions, that style is where they attack. They're aggressive. When they're backed into a corner, they will lash out. The lion attacks and addresses conflict in the moment. They don't want to beat around the bush. They attack it. They're very much aware of their feelings. You don't have to guess what they're feeling at the time. They're very expressive, and many times they want to win at whatever the cost. The big belief system is they believe that their way is the right way. That's kind of the thoughts of the lion. And the big thing is that you might hear a lion say, "I'm right and you're wrong." Or you might find them exploding in anger. I see some of you smiling because either you are seeing yourself or you know somebody that's like this. Or the goal for the lion, if you think about a real lion, it's domination. And the relationship is valued less. And there's no way that we're going to resolve this. There's no way we're going to negotiate. It's I win, you lose. That's it. So that's the lion. The next one is the possum. And that's where they surrender. And they'll say, "I'll give in." They repress their emotions. They stuff them. When there's conflict, when you ask them what's wrong, they'll say, "Oh, nothing. How are you doing?" "I'm fine." But inside, they're really seething. So they avoid conflict through passivity, and they repress their emotions. They hope that the problem will somehow just go away. And many times you'll see them smiling on the outside, but being really torn up and miserable on the inside. And oftentimes, this is, quote, the approved Christian distress response. You know, it's like, you know, this is the person who's the doormat. This is the person who, oh, they're such a nice person. You never see them upset about anything. And then you wonder, you know, they're getting a divorce. What happened there? So, anyway, I think that's a prevalent possum is a prevalent one. The other third one is a rabbit, and they tend to run. They'll avoid the conflict, and they just want to get out of there. They run from the conflict. They don't want to get involved. They will withdraw. They'll escape, or they'll just walk out of the room. And one of the things they do is they will run from something, from the conflict, to something else. Like they'll say, "I'm out of here, I'm going shopping." Or they'll go to food, or they'll go to something to comfort themselves because they're upset. So they run from something to something else. They run from their spouse to something or someone else. The last one is deer in the headlights, and this is where they freeze when there's anxiety. They don't know what to do. They're anxious. They're caught off guard. They're like a deer in the headlights. And when you come up on a deer, if you've ever seen that, they just kind of freeze many times. And that's why you see so much roadkill. And so they feel run over. Many times they feel hurt. And there is a fifth option here that's healthy. And that's where I care enough about you and our relationship that I want to confront this. It's not going away. I'm willing to speak the truth in love to you. We're going to deal with this issue as it really is. Let's look at the truth. Let's lay this out. And so you value the relationship more than winning the argument. And so you're willing to work through this with them, with your spouse. You know, go to the next one. Sorry, I'm not keeping up here. Question? Yeah.
You know, I just don't see a whole lot of difference between the deer and the headlight and the possum and the rabbit. Could you maybe expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, the possum will stay there, but they're like a turtle. They'll pull their head into their shell, but they'll be right there standing there with a big smile on their face. If we had time, I'd show a clip where it shows Everybody Loves Raymond, where all four of those are in the scene. But the rabbit doesn't want to even be anywhere near where the conflict, it makes them feel so uncomfortable. And so a deer in the headlight might be the person who they don't even know they've been run over until maybe the next day. And they start thinking about a comment that was made at work or a comment that the spouse made, and they realize, hey, wait a minute. What they said yesterday, that really bugs me. So they're kind of like, when it's happening, they don't even realize they've just been run over. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
Okay. So, are you guys seeing yourselves in this?
Yes.
And so what we do here is we ask them to basically talk about which type are you primarily. And sometimes we have a primary and a secondary. And sometimes at work we're one way and at home we're another way. You find that to be true in your life? At home you might be a lion, at work you're a rabbit. You know, you avoid conflict. So we want them talking about this, and in the group we'll discuss, and usually as a couple facilitator we'll go first and we'll share. You know, my wife's a rabbit and I tend to be the sometimes the deer in the headlight and sometimes the possum, and then eventually I become the lion after a while if I start thinking about it. And so this is really important. And in the handouts, on the flip side of these handouts, we talk about what does an unselfish lion look like, and what does somebody who, what's the positive aspect of being a lion? And we want them to go through this in their date night. That's one of the options that they can go through. And there's positives and negatives of each of these conflict styles, and there's also selfish manifestations and unselfish manifestations. So for instance, I'll just give you an example. An unselfish manifestation of a lion is if somebody's being abused, you want a lion on your side. You want the lion to step in and say, look, there's human trafficking happening in this city. We can't sit back and do nothing. There's high school kids that are dying by drunk drivers, or they're dying because they're drunk. As moms, we need to do something. So now you have Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. So there is a positive where lions can use that to just say, well, I'm going to run from that problem. That's somebody else's problem. So we won't go into it. Like I said, in the leader notes, we have those as handouts. And what we find is that in this group, this outreach group, people are starting to really bond. People are starting to open up. They feel connected. They feel very close because they're getting to know other couples on a whole nother level that they haven't experienced out there in the world. People just don't talk about these things. And yet, most people have never, where did they learn how to resolve conflict? Most of them have learned it from their parents. And a lot of times that wasn't always a good model. The date night assignment for homework is we want them to review the distress responses, think about ways they can improve, and then we have a handout that's called Fighting Fair in Marriage. I have a friend named Dr. Paul Meyer, he's a Christian psychiatrist, and he put together these principles of fighting fair in marriage, and they're do's and don'ts. And how do you fight fair? What are some phrases or things that are off limits? We want them to talk about this on their date night and then talk about the areas where they're doing well in resolving conflict and some of the things that they want to work on. So that's their assignment for the week. Fourth week, we're going to transition into forgiveness. And this is the last week. I usually tell them this is wrapping up our series. And the goal for this is to address the themes of forgiveness, rebuilding trust in the relationship, and how do you develop unselfishness. And all of these require courage, and they require that somebody admit that they humble themselves and admit that they were wrong. And so the topics that we get into, we'll throw out this question. Why is it so hard to admit our wrongs and the pain we cause others? What would you say? Why is it so hard to admit when we're wrong and the pain we cause others? pride, yeah, embarrassment, shame, yeah. And there is a tremendous need for forgiveness. In this small group, there's a lot of other questions under this that we won't go into, obviously, here. But we talk about our need for forgiveness, and we've all experienced holding on to past hurts. Our spouse has hurt us. They've said something or done something that's really hurt us. We've been disappointed. We've felt betrayed, or maybe they've been insensitive to us, and we're feeling angry about it. And if we don't deal with it, it can be rather emotionally exhausting, and it can also be very destructive to the relationship, because there's this unresolved issue, unresolved conflict, and we sweep it under the rug, it can blow up in our faces later on. So if we can't get to a place where we truly are willing to forgive and get past the hurts, we'll never be able to achieve relational intimacy. So forgiveness is huge. Billy Graham's wife, Ruth Graham, I love this quote. She says, "A good marriage is made up of two really good forgivers." You have to have two people that are willing to forgive. And forgiveness is an essential part of a strong marriage. And so one of the things that we say is, how do you define forgiveness? What does forgiveness look like? What would you say if you're in a relationship with your spouse and you need to forgive? What does that practically look like if you've forgiven them? What's that look like? So you've given up the right to be right, and say, "I'm willing. I need to be willing to understand." As Covey says, "Seek first to understand, then to be understood," and then trying to understand the other person's point of view as opposed to trying to prove you're right. Okay. Any other thoughts on what forgiveness looks like? Yeah. So you're saying when you haven't keep you don't keep rehearsing and you don't keep thinking how I'm going to get even with them or wish ill of them, and you don't think about it anymore.
Which is a great indication that there's constantly processing.
Yeah, that is bitterness, is when you keep mulling it over and over and so you won't let it go. Yeah, I think so. I think it does. It is a process. Is it a one-time process? Once we forgive, it's all we're always just forgiven, or sometimes do we need to re-forgive? Yeah, I think there's times where we go back and re-forgive. Any other thoughts on what forgiveness is? That was a good insight. Absolutely. That's an excellent point, is that undeserved, unmerited favor, that even though they may not deserve it, even though they've hurt me, even though I was frustrated and angry with them, I'm choosing to forgive because, as you said, I've been forgiven. Okay? One thing we let them know is what forgiveness is not. It's not just forgetting something or pretending that it never happened. Forgiveness is not tolerance of something that should never be tolerated, like abuse. It's also an act that can be accomplished in an instant. It is a process. So it's not like, snap, I'm just going to turn the light off and I'm going to feel forgiving feelings. Sometimes the feelings come later. It's an act of the will, it's a choice, and it is a process. And I think this other point is that it's, as you said, it's extending grace, it's free, it's honest, and it's giving up the demands for perfect behavior, perfect justice, perfect resolution, and perfect retribution. You're giving up that right. And so what I would say here is that when we go through this, we hand out this card, and this is again in the note packet, and it is a card on one side basically that shows how to work through conflict, that you focus on one issue rather than many issues, you focus on the problem rather than the person, you focus on the behavior rather than their character and not doing character assassinations, you focus on specifics rather than generalizations, you use I statements, I'm feeling this when you do this, rather than you statements, or you always, you never. Well, those will put people on the defensive. You focus on observation of the facts versus rather than judging motive. Well, the reason you did that is because it's focusing on mutual understanding as opposed to who's winning and who's losing the argument. And then the right side basically of this is kind of the anatomy of what forgiveness looks like. Many times we've never seen what an apology, a true apology, and what asking for forgiveness looks like. It's not just saying, I'm sorry you feel that way. What's wrong with that? Yeah, it's not taking ownership for it. It's saying, I don't have a problem, I'm sorry you do. You know. So this is saying, I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong, I'm willing to say I'm sorry, I'm willing to change, and I'm willing to ask for forgiveness. And this is actually a tremendous skill if you have young kids, be able to teach them these skills in life. They'll have one foot up when they get married or when they have a college roommate if they can practice these. We have four options in this seeker group, the Growing Your Marriage, and I'm not going to go in depth over all of them, but one of them, we have a one-page article by Tim Keller, and it's called Real Forgiveness is Costly Suffering. And I've used this in the group, and it's a one-pager. Tim Keller's from Redeemer in New York City. He has a different perspective on forgiveness. He helps to make it really concrete at what it looks like. The other thing that, and that's a copy of what the article looks like. And then I use this a lot. The clip from Les Miserables. Most of you are familiar with that movie. This is the 1996 with Liam Neeson, that version. And it's the clip where Jean Valjean is caught. He's staying over at the bishop's house and he's caught stealing. And they bring him back. And you want perfect justice. You want him to get thrown in the slammer. And yet the bishop extends and shows a great picture of what grace and mercy looks like. And so we show this clip, and then we ask them to identify the different elements of forgiveness in this clip. What did you see? What did you observe? What impacted you the most from this clip about true forgiveness? And then we ask them, does anyone have a story about when you've experienced forgiveness? And that's when, we segue into I'm getting ahead of myself here. When we segue into, I usually share my testimony, and in your notes, that says you can do a testimonial. We encourage people to maybe do a little teaching on Ephesians chapter 4, 31 through 32, where it's talking about making the choice about putting aside anger and wrath and choosing to forgive. And, you know, how do we can't forgive unless we've experienced God's forgiveness. And so at this point, I'll share my own testimony of how I came to Christ and experienced forgiveness for a lot of things in my past, the things I'm doing now, and the things I will do. And so we say, we leave it up to the discretion of the facilitator to decide, is this group ready to hear a full-blown gospel presentation? And you can do that. Or do you just kind of give them a salt talk, a little bit of a teaching on forgiveness by sharing your testimony? And one of the options is Matthew 18, the parable about the man who needed to repay a multi-million dollar debt and was forgiven of that, and then turned around and was holding this other guy who only owed him a few bucks, demanding immediate payment. And so we say, what's the point of that story? So here's four good options that you can use. We encourage you not to try to use all of them, but to pick one or two. And then at this point, another option along with Ephesians is Colossians 3:12 through 14 and verse 17. And I think I have that here, and I've used that as a passage. Chapter 3:12. It says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if anyone has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. And so it says, forgive as the Lord forgave you. How can we get forgiven by the Lord? What does that look like? Does it mean, you know, I used to think if I was a good enough person, I could earn God's favor, and if I caught him on a good day and my good deeds outweighed my bad, that somehow he'd let me in. He'd be forgiving. But I found it's much easier than that. And it's through what Christ did on the cross, through his grace, by my faith in what he's done and receiving his forgiveness of all of my sin. It's as simple as that. So at this point, we say, you know, this is concluding our group, and the question really comes down to where do we go from here? And there's a lot of options here, and we want them to give us their feedback. What did they get out of the group? What was out of the 4 weeks? What hit them? Was there any particular one or two points that really resonated with them? Was there any good nuggets they took from that for their marriage? And you know, the question is, we want to improve this small group. Give us your feedback. What do you want to do? And many is a next step in your own growing your marriage. And I've never had a group say they didn't want to keep going. So some of the options, depending on where the group is at, you can invite them to your home church, you can invite them to church, you can do an investigative study. We're going to do a Gospel of John study. With Search, we do this thing called Foundations, and it's actually 17 weeks. It's building a blueprint for a relationship with God. And it talks about how can you come to know God and experience his love and forgiveness. So anyway, this is pretty much where this concludes the group, and we've done parting optional gifts. As, you know, we've given away the book for women only or for men only. Shanti Feldheim, I think is her name. They have these books at the book table. The Love and Respect book by Emerson Eggerichs, but that's a little bit more Christian, but it's still good content. And then 40 Days, 40 Day Love Dare, that's pretty overtly Christian, but use that with discretion. What we have found is that people have come away from these wanting to continue on. As I mentioned earlier, many of these guys, the guys that I've worked with, have gotten into other groups. I was just talking to a gal who led one of these, and one of the people are now plugged into their home group. Trying to see if I have John Ruse had a good comment. He and Connie from this church, they led a group and had a real favorable response. It says, we did this outreach series at the home of a young couple in our group who have many warm neighbor contacts in Westerville. They also have a passion for this topic because they weathered a storm in their own marriage few would have survived and are now on the other side of it. Because some of their friends were single, we turned the series to be about relationships. So they changed the name from Growing Your Marriage to Relationship Series, which that's a great creative idea. The series just ended. The young couple led two of the discussions that there was their apprentices. We had another worker couple from our home group lead the other two. We did them around a food party theme, so everyone brought something. The group wants to continue. It's going to lead into a new series about what motivates you. That one of the guests wanted to explore that. That will lead to a worldview series where we look at comparative religions and what they say about the big questions of life. This is the third time we've done a Grow Your Marriage group. It's awesome. You have to shut it down. The conversation gets going so good. And people really get a taste of community. And to hear about grace in the context of small group sharing. The main thing is to set a date, communicate it, and go. Make it fun, and allow the spirit time to work. And I think, you know, with that, my encouragement would be, you know, step out in faith and just go ahead and launch one. And the people that have done that, stepped out of their comfort zone and have had a blast doing it and are leading several other ones as a result. So I'm just going to open it up, close it out with if you have any questions. I know we didn't cover everything. The manual has everything you really need in there. It has all the questions in there, and you can customize it to meet the needs of the people that you're trying to reach out to. What thoughts, questions, comments that you have? Is there anything that wasn't clear or that you're thinking about using? Or are you pretty fried after a full day of workshops? Sure, yeah. We don't want to shut it down, but I think like we have one tonight. It starts at 7. In the first 30 minutes, everybody gets together, catches up. Some people have just come back from vacation, and a couple, we've got some new people. So 30 minutes of mixed mingle food, and then say, hey, we're going to get started, and everybody pulls up a chair, and chairs in the living room, and for an hour and a half, it's this back and forth, and you just kind of gauge if they're really into the discussion. We stay there for a while, and then I might skip a few things. But that's typically, and then we end at 9. We don't open in prayer and close in prayer because these are non-believers that don't feel comfortable with that. But again, play it by ear. You got to know who's in your audience and if they feel, what's their comfort level, where are they at spiritually in their journey.
Or babysitters or whatever.
Yeah, like tonight, we didn't, they wanted to go more in depth into the listening, and so we stopped at 9 o'clock and said, we'll pick up this next week tonight, we're going to review, and then we'll practice a little bit. And so, you know, we're not in any big hurry, and they're cool with that. So, any other thoughts, questions? Well, let's close, and I'll just close our time.
Uh-huh. You made just a comment at the end there. The way I took this is at this point, these couples are sharing about things they've never talked to anyone. And my thought is how that is really building trust in the community.
Absolutely.
And you said, you know, these relationships go on. That's
it is, and that's, you know, it's not rocket science, but it's just people have a need to feel loved, and they have a need to be secure and significant, and they want, men especially, want to feel respected and heard, and so they come and they're talking about things they'd never dreamed of talking about on the golf course with their buddies, but here now they're with a bunch of strangers, and this group is bonded. They've talked about some amazing things in their marriage. They've gotten some new insight. The light bulbs have gone off. And they are wanting to keep going because they've got a taste of community. And they've seen grace modeled, and they have a bigger picture where they may have come in with a negative view of Christ and Christianity. Hopefully we're bringing them closer along that angle scale. Absolutely, and we all have a testimony. You know, it's the once I was blind, now I see, like the blind man. It's as simple as that. I met Christ, and I now see, and now can be forgiven and forgive others. So yeah, it's that's definitely a benefit of the community piece, the connecting piece, the transparency that goes on. But the biggest thing is they see the credibility of the Bible, and they see how relevant it is to everyday life, and that God's Word does speak to where they're at. And for many, this gives them hope that they can improve their marriage. So, well, thanks, guys. And if you know of others that maybe you would want to have as an apprentice, and they're here, encourage them to come tomorrow morning at 10:30. If you haven't picked up a manual, I encourage you to purchase one of those because it has everything you need in there. So let me close in prayer. Lord Jesus, thanks. We know that we are your ambassadors, and we are just available to you to be used as a tool in your hand. And hopefully today we're a little sharper tool. And Lord, I just pray that you would open up divine opportunities right within our neighborhood and at work. And Lord, help us to step out of our comfort zone and just to take that leap of faith and trust you that you want to use us in this way to be salt and light. So Lord, as we go from here, we just pray that you'd help us to be good stewards of the content, and that you'd use us to impact many lives for Christ in our community. In Jesus' name, amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.